Before we begin, a quick note that the Hogg Foundation has open funding opportunities for the Libraries Supporting Community Mental Health Grants, the Stephanie J. Bryan Bold Spirit of Achievement Scholarships, and the Moore Fellowship for Doctoral Dissertation Research. To learn more about these opportunities, visit our website at hogg.utexas.edu/funding-opportunities. Also, the month of May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Throughout the month, we'll be highlighting this year's theme, More Good Days Together, and focusing on the resilience and diverse experiences that shape mental health journeys within Texas communities. To learn more, visit our website, hogg.utexas.edu. And now we bring you episode 186 of Into the Fold. When we think about policy change, we often think about experts, statistics, and long hours at the Capitol. But some of the most powerful tools for change aren't data points, they're stories. Stories about what it means to navigate a mental health system that doesn't see you. Stories about fighting for a voice when the system overlooks your community. In advocacy, personal stories turn abstract issues into human ones. And that's where real change begins. Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, the Mental Health Podcast. I'm Mike Evans, and I'm glad to have you with us as we continue our season-long exploration of growing capacity for change. This episode is the second of the policy arc of our season, an arc focused on how systems change happens and how mental health policy is shaped not just by moments of urgency, but by sustained leadership. For today, policy, telling your story.
Stories are incredibly powerful because right now we are living in a very powerful group of people's imagination. We're living in a very powerful group of people's story. And if we want to rewrite that story, we have to start sharing our own stories and really wage the battle of big ideas and talk about our lived experiences and our perspectives and the policy changes we want to seek as a result of the lived experiences and the stories that we all hold.
Today's conversation looks at how lived experience becomes a catalyst for advocacy. We'll explore how young people, and really anyone, can use their personal story to shape systems, influence policy, and make their communities stronger. My guests are Aurora Harris and Casey Corpus of Young Invincibles, a national organization that amplifies young voices to influence policy on health, higher education, and economic opportunity. Through their work in Texas, they help young people turn experience into impact by finding their voice, protecting their well-being, and learning the power of advocacy. Aurora, Casey, welcome to our studio. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, so I would like to start with just, you know, with what you see every day kind of in your work, the moment when someone realizes that personal experience has the power to create change, how do you help young people connect their story to a larger policy concern? Aurora, maybe we could start with you on that.
Yeah, of course. And thank you so much for having me. This is such a great question to start with. You know, the best part of our work is helping young people tell their story and watching them understand the power that they have. And we help young people connect their stories in a variety of ways. I think The first thing I'll say is that we run leadership development programs at Young Invincible. So we have our Young Advocates program, where we train young adults ages 18 to 34 on the policy advocacy process in Texas. We also have a youth advisory board, and then we also meet young people where they are in a variety of ways. We have a student advisory council. We are on college campuses a lot, but we're also like in apartment complexes in Houston, and you can catch us at health fairs in East Texas. Like, we really are trying to meet young people where they are online, on TikTok. And so we're really sort of proud of the work we do and the ways that we're trying to meet young people and meet this moment. I think the first thing we do is we help young people understand storytelling and narrative shift, and that it's the cornerstone of policy advocacy. Stories are incredibly powerful because right now we are living in a very powerful group of people's imagination. We're living in a very powerful group of people's story. And if we want to rewrite that story, we have to start sharing our own stories and really wage the battle of big ideas, and talk about our lived experiences and our perspectives and the policy changes we want to seek as a result of the lived experiences and the stories that we all hold. So that's sort of the first piece, is like training young people on storytelling, on narrative work. What is narrative change? What are the narratives that are dominant in Texas and dominant in our country? And I think a lot of us know those narratives, right? Pull yourself up by the bootstraps, right? We've kind of grown up and we're swimming in a lot of those narratives. So one of the things we have to do at Young Invincibles is, well, what's your lived experience? And then what is a narrative that you want to shift? And what is a narrative that you want to put out there? So we do a lot of training around that, before we even like sort of get young people in the spaces where they're actually sharing their story. And then after the training, we use their stories in a variety of ways. Testimonies at the Capitol in Austin, which Casey can probably talk more about, media interviews, videos and content on social media, of course, like TikTok, Instagram, Twitch, all of that. It's like its own universe in like internet culture is so big with young people. And so that's a really big place where we're training young people on how to share their story. Vlogging, op-eds, letters to the editors, you name it. And I think the biggest takeaway, though, is making sure young people understand the link between their lived experience and public systems and policy advocacy, and understanding that their stories are what's shaping and influencing these policies and systems that we're trying to change. And I hand it over to you, Casey.
Yeah, I think Aurora really was able to touch on a lot of the things. The only thing I'll add is obviously with connecting young adult experiences to policy, we often use previous stories or try to find scenarios that will connect to the experiences that young adults are facing so that they see themselves reflected in the policy work, because I don't think that young adults are often immediately seeing that their stories can create that political or policy change. Often it's finding ways to connect their experiences to policy and show that example first. And then through the process of giving those opportunities to tell their stories through all the things that Aurora talked about, op-eds or testifying at the Capitol, I think kind of getting that feedback, seeing how that resonates with people, and kind of experiencing that journey is often what really is that aha moment of, oh, we can actually create policy change. But we also try to model showing them previous examples of that through our work of showing how young adults have helped inspire that change.
So one follow-up question I had has to do with, if there are any nuances that either of you have learned about how to frame a story so that it actually moves decision makers without being tokenized. And that's kind of a word that I'm throwing into the conversation. I don't know if it's something either of you has ever had any opportunity to reflect on, but Casey, maybe you've.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really great question and definitely something that we have encountered, this idea, and definitely something that we try to ensure that we don't have our advocates feeling that way. I think when it comes to testifying and sharing your lived experiences, that is very often a vulnerable situation that young adults are putting themselves in when they're talking about their lived experiences, especially with very sensitive topics. And I think there's so many instances of that, but we try to really strike that balance between making the experience being an empowering one versus, a traumatizing or a way to kind of, share those experiences and it feel traumatizing or like you're not going to get what you want out of that experience, knowing that a lot of times there'll be young adults who feel like I'm going to share this really traumatizing story and that's going to completely change people's minds. And often, sometimes it does really work and it's so powerful. Sometimes it's not met with the reaction that they want. And so we really try to empower them to understand that, A, this is an experience, this is going to hopefully create change. And even if it doesn't change it in this moment, this will probably, change someone's mind. But also prepping people so that they feel they know what the outcomes can be so that they are sharing their story regardless. It's going to feel like an empowering moment regardless of what, other people's reactions might be. So I think that preparation is also really key so that, again, that expectation is set and they're not, left feeling like, oh, I thought this was going to totally shift everything and it didn't happen. So I think that's also a really great one. But I think it's also the community building aspect of it, of knowing that when you tell their story, it might not change the legislator or the decision maker in front of you, but it'll definitely create some ripple effects in the community or maybe with other people that are testifying.
Yeah, 100%. And I think one example that is coming to mind for me is we have been successfully running campaigns around parenting students here in Texas. And for those listening who don't know what we mean by parenting student, it's a college student who is also raising children under the age of, 18, right? And these are by and large women, women of color. And they're oftentimes single parents. And it takes them on average 3 or 4 additional years to complete their post-secondary degree because they're having to navigate all that comes with motherhood and parenthood while also trying to complete their education. I think as organizers, understanding what are the narratives that already exist around Black single mothers, for example, right? What is the like media landscape? What comes to mind when folks hear a parenting student? What comes to mind? Like what emotions and images are already present? I think at YI, we take extra care to understand the like narrative and storytelling landscape that we're about to put young people in and put young women in. And then what does it mean to like center the stories of parenting students in a way that feels affirming and empowering? And is about their value and is about their assets that they bring to the higher education landscape, to our economy, to our communities. And I think the way that we do that in Young Invincibles is involving young people at every single step in the campaign. And any organizer or funder or advocate that might be listening, this is like really for you. What helps making sure that young people or any community isn't tokenized is, were they involved at every step? Were they there for the policy agenda setting process? Were they there to understand and learn about the bill and help draft the bill and really be a part of it the way the whole sausage is made, rather than just bringing them in when it's time to testify and share this really, traumatic story about trying to complete college while navigating childcare and not having SNAP access and not having housing and sort of all the things, right? I think the way you get out of tokenism is really centering community from the very beginning to the very end. And we have done that at YI really successfully. We're able to pass multiple pieces of legislation allowing student parents to register to classes early before other folks, right? Making sure that they have someone on campuses to help them sort of navigate resources so that they can complete at the same time as their peers. And even getting data, right? Like this is a group of young women who weren't even really being counted. And because of our campaign, we're able to now have data on who are parenting students in the state. And then that'll help us further understand what resources that they need. So we've been really successful at making sure groups aren't tokenized. And I think the way that we do that is just involving the community at every step of the process.
Okay, so maybe shifting gears just slightly, and if we could get just a little bit more concrete regarding, I guess, the do's and don'ts of policy storytelling. Not that there are like universally applicable rules, and one thing that I'm taking from what both of y'all have said is, you know, that it can take some doing to, you know, to finally extract what works best. You know, taking into account, you know, your particular voice and your particular or most characteristic modes of expression, you know, when it comes to, you know, kind of how you take up space in that work. Once someone decides that they're ready to share their story, I would guess that the next step is figuring out how to use it strategically. And so, what in your opinion makes a story effective in advocacy or policy settings? And are there any pitfalls to avoid?
Right. So yeah, I think one of the big do's is being concise and clear both about what your message is and how it connects to either the topic at hand or the policy that you are trying to connect to. Making sure that you're telling an authentic story and not just making something up, but also really taking the time to be clear about what that process looks like from beginning to end so that you know what you want out of it and what you would like to share as an advocate. So that, you know, sometimes in the moment you'll hear other people's testimony or you'll see some other people talk about their stories and people will maybe want to change it up and start pulling out things. I think knowing going into that opportunity, whether it be an interview or a testimony, knowing what you want to get out of it and what exactly that point is that connects, so that you know, you're not trying to make things up at the last second or kind of switch things up or confuse and muddle the story. So I think just being really concise is kind of like the first thing I'll bring up.
Okay.
I think Casey, you gave wonderful tips on some do's and don'ts around speaking to legislators and speaking to the media. And I wanted to kind of tackle some do's of speaking to your peers and speaking to your folks who are trying to engage in this moment. I think this political moment we're in is just nothing short of a crisis, right? And in moments of political crisis, people are going to grab the best ideas that are laying around. And so it's also really important that we really just build a bigger we in this moment and get as politically engaged as we possibly can. And so a couple of tips around sharing your story with like folks who are trying to organize is just making sure that you are framing the conversation, using your story to uncover what the other person cares most about. So it's a little bit of a different ask than when you're speaking with like a legislator or a decision maker, because in that instance, you're really trying to uncover what the other person cares about. And then you want to ask some like probing questions to like help them identify who's responsible, right? Like, who is the decision maker that is stopping them from getting SNAP access, stopping them from getting healthcare access, like really helping them identify who's responsible. And then I think a key piece is educating, visioning, and articulating your plan to win, right? Like, what's the larger vision? What's your collective plan to win? And how are we trying to build long-term power in this moment? And then organizing is all about asking. You're sharing your story that ultimately, when you're talking to a peer, you're trying to invite them to take a specific action towards this plan to win. And so making sure you have an ask in your back pocket, like, okay, I need you to come join this Young Advocates program with me at Young Invincibles. This is a really cool organization. They're fighting to like expand healthcare access and mental healthcare access. Come to this next meeting with me. It's going to be Tuesday, 6 o'clock, right? And sort of like help them follow through on their commitment. Send that reminder text so that they can come to the organizing meeting with you. And I just want to name that it's very important to share your story with decision makers and with your legislator and with the media. But now more than ever, it's important to start sharing your story with peers. People feel really demoralized right now and like nothing that they do matters. And when you share your story with them, you're really like awakening that sense of possibility within them. And so I just wanted to share some news around that as well.
Yeah, and I'll just add, I think one powerful thing about storytelling is with legislators or change makers, decision makers, obvious storytelling will provide context or give some insight into the problem that they're trying to solve or what the impact of a policy could be on folks. And so that helps provide context in that way. But I think for the community, for everyone else, when you hear storytelling, that often can help other folks see themselves or contextualize how they might be impacted by something. So realizing that maybe if they heard the term, they wouldn't think that they were connected to that issue, but hearing someone else talk about their real experience, they might realize, oh, I actually have experienced this before, or I have been through something similar to that. And now that connects them to the issue. So it kind of has like a way to kind of touch everyone and be able to impact a lot of different people, but it really can have those dual impact on both like those that are affecting change and then those who might be brought into the fold.
Okay, so one question I've got and is, do you have any like case studies or kind of personal anecdotes regarding someone's story actually having a catalytic effect on decision maker action that you can recollect? What was like the context? What was the kind of the eventual outcome?
I think the one that's coming to mind is going back to the parenting student campaign that I lifted up earlier. We had a parenting student living in Austin, and she was previously in the foster care system, had aged out, had a son, and was going to college, but dropped out due to needing childcare access and also like housing and sort of just other basic needs support. She applies to the Young Advocates program really because she like needed a job, right? But we just saw the like powerful story within her and just also her ability to kind of motivate and others and sort of this deep love that she had for her son and accepted her into the program. Like it was no brainer. And we had known that we wanted to do some work around parenting students because we had been doing all of this research, right? But research is only one piece of the puzzle when you're doing policy advocacy. Yes, data is important, but like Casey said, those stories really help bring the policy issue to life and provide the context for others. And so we're having legislative visits, and she begins to share her story. She talks about what it was like to sort of live out of her car. What it would mean for her to be able to complete college on time, and the type of job that she wanted to do. She wanted to like work in public safety, and she just really talked about her dreams and wanting to be able to accomplish that. And it moved a Texas legislative member to pick up our bill and draft the legislation. And it was the first of its kind in the state of Texas to ever be about the parenting student population, because again, at the time, parenting students weren't even being counted. And so this group of people were really invisible. And so it just really inspired that legislator to like pick up that piece of legislation and sort of draft it for us and take a chance, all because she, shared her story with him during those legislative visits. And so that's just one example that kind of comes to mind. And like I said earlier, we ended up winning that campaign, although it did take us like how many years, Casey? 4 years, 5 years to win
I
it?
think it was like
Oh,
six
six
or
years.
something.
Yeah, it took us
Wow,
6 years
wow.
to win it, but it all started with her sharing her story. So that's just one example that I can think of.
Yeah, and just really quickly, I'll kind of also give an example. A couple, not this past session, but the previous session, we at the state of Texas, we're working on thinking about the funding formula for community colleges in Texas as a whole, and what that funding formula would look like. We created a group called the Student Advisory Council, just because we saw that young adults weren't really being, really featured or asked a lot, or considered when thinking about how do we want to fund community colleges moving forward, and what those outcomes could be centered around. And so we created this young adult program to kind of really get them to understand what this whole system looks like, but also to be able to empower them to give their own recommendations and be able to testify and engage with that whole process. And I think throughout we started to have them testify and engage in this. And over time, their stories, I think, really brought to life for a lot of the commission members, for the folks who eventually ended up on the committee at the Texas Ledge. They really were able to see the funding formula as more than just a formula, and saw the real life implications of what funding community colleges meant for communities, for people, for parents, for people who are, looking to raise their families. And so it really completely changed that context. And what the ultimate result of that was, where they were asking us, at every level, for students, for community college students, to come and engage and testify and provide their insight. They wanted to make sure that at that point, moving forward, every level had at least some student input into everything. So because they saw the value of that, but also the outcome in the funding formula was that it is now very centered around student outcomes and affordability, which were not really terms that were really being as lifted up in the process from the beginning. They were thinking more about enrollment and data pieces like that. But in the end, now it's focused on students, again, their outcomes. Are they graduating? Are they able to succeed? And I think that really shows how just the students themselves getting involved in that process really reframed how those legislators now approach that whole process.
Okay, wonderful. So I'm going to get y'all out of here on this last question. Just if there's any way that our listeners can maybe learn a little bit more about your ongoing work and how they can either just follow or support it. If there's anything that you'd like to mention or plug, now would be a wonderful time.
Yeah, so I think we'll probably tackle different pieces of this, because we do have a state presence, and then we also have our national presence. I think if you just follow our YI account, we post about our state and national goings on, happenings on that one account. So we keep it pretty concise in that way. So I think definitely follow that. We do have a Texas specific newsletter, which you can join from our website, the
What's the
Texas
web
page,
URL?
Younginvincibles.org.
youngindivisibles.org. Okay, great.
Yes.
Okay, and our handles are at Young Invincibles. Sorry, y'all. I'm always like assume there's like another word in there. But yeah, so we post a lot about our upcoming events. We'll be doing a lot, especially this upcoming summer. We'll be looking forward to the 2027 legislative session, and so we'll be starting to think about what policy we want to be thinking about, what our advocacy efforts are going to be looking like come 2027. And so the summer and the fall is a really great time to start engaging, if that's something that you're interested in, because we will be really thinking about that. We also do two cohorts, one in the spring and one in the fall. So if you are interested in being or applying for our program, that's also the best way to kind of get that information is by signing up through our newsletter or following us on social media, because we post when we're accepting applications.
Okay, great. Casey, Aurora, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about just how impactful personal storytelling done in the right way can be. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
you. Thanks for having us.
Before we wrap up today's episode, we wanted to spend a few minutes highlighting a resource that brings this conversation to life in a very practical way. Last year, the Hogg Foundation developed a lived experience storytelling primer, a toolkit designed to help people share their stories in ways that are both impactful and sustainable. To talk about how that toolkit was created and how it's being used in real-world advocacy, I'm joined by Maddie Garza of the Hogg Foundation, our policy fellow who played a lead role in the storytelling primer, and in his second visit to our studio, Ayan Molledina of SEAT, which stands for Students Engaged in Advancing Texas, who's been using it out in the field. Maddie, Ayan, thank you so much for being with us today.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me.
So my first question is for Maddie. What gap were you trying to fill with the lived experience storytelling primer? Maybe you can give our listeners just a little bit of background about how it is that we would become interested in both lived experience and storytelling from an advocacy standpoint. And just what do folks see that made this resource necessary?
Yeah, no, that's great. A great question and really vital way to start talking about this resource and understanding the history behind it. So in the policy space, organizations and advocacy groups have an agenda. They have specific things that they'd like to see lawmakers do and laws they'd like to see them pass. And in some situations, it would be really useful for those groups to have someone who has lived experience with the issue come and speak in front of these lawmakers, because at the end of the day, they're the ones that are closest to the issue. And those stories might be more moving than a statistic of how many people are in these institutions, how many people experience these programs. So, with good intentions, these organizations and advocacy groups ask people to come speak in front of lawmakers. But unfortunately, there have been times where, these people who were invited weren't prepared adequately with the emotional and psychological support needed to really dive into personal issues in such a vulnerable and intense setting. So, that's kind of where this project really came into inception. It was the Hogg Foundation in partnership with Recovery People, which is an organization who does work to uplift the voices of people who have lived experience of mental health and substance use challenges in their journey towards recovery. So, the resource was really developed to bridge that gap, like you said, between people who were invited to come speak at the Capitol, but ensuring that they had at least to beginning stages towards adequate resources and preparation to share their story in front of lawmakers. Because, sitting in front of that mic, staring up at the dais in front of these powerful decision makers can be extremely intimidating and sometimes invalidating, and we're asking people to have vulnerability when, unfortunately, I've seen with my own eyes that vulnerability without direction and without, concrete steps or suggestions for solutions doesn't go as far with these lawmakers. I've seen them, their body language will shift or their eyes will glaze over when people start to cry or get overly emotional. So I think that it's really helpful, not that emotions are bad, but to ensure that the emotion, the vulnerability, the lived experience is coupled with a clear direction, and a message of hope for what they would like to see come out of, the discussion. And so, yeah, that's really where this primer, this idea for a lived experience storytelling toolkit came about.
Okay, wonderful. And so, Ayan, I introduced you to this resource when we were recording episode 185. Yeah. And so you've actually taken this toolkit into the field and put it to some use. So what was your first reaction when you saw it, and how have you been incorporating it in your work with SEAT?
This is definitely a resource that was much needed. We work with students all the time, and we always say that stories are what change hearts and minds of lawmakers, of individuals, anybody who you want to be on your side. That is what you need to share. Data points and facts are always important, and you should be well-versed in those as well. But Maddie alluded to this as well, of what truly is going to help push it across the finish line, push those statements and those asks across the finish line, is lived experience. And a lot of times, like Maddie said, those folks who go in, and particularly students, but really folks of all ages, who have their lived experiences ready, obviously because they know what happened to them, they know what got them into this, but they don't know how to craft it into something concise that they can share in front of a legislative committee or some sort of legislative body. And they also don't know a lot of times how to quite tie it back to the ask that they are pushing forward. And so if it's something about a bill or if it's something about a policy that's being proposed, it's really important that you tie your lived experience back to that. But a lot of times that can be a challenge, even for me. A lot of times when I'm thinking about my story and I go in a bunch of different directions about, oh, and then this happened and I started feeling this way and then this went wrong. And that's all really important to share, but it needs to all be cohesive and tie back together. And so this primer really helped with that because we were able to share it with students at our advocacy day, which we recently held, which had over 100 students in the Dallas-Fort Worth area join us from across the state. And we met with them and gave them the opportunity to look at the primer and understand how this can be a resource that they use in the upcoming legislative session. And even when they go testify before city council in front of their school boards, how this is something that they can use to identify what points of their story tie back to the ask that they're making and how they can then use that in a way to positively impact the issue in front of them. And so it has to have a lot of those different components. It has to have the struggle that you have gone through. It has to have a little bit of how that ties back to the policy issue, why it's important. And then it has to have that clear, concise ask and a little bit of hope, like Maddie said.
Okay, so Maddie, do you have any questions for Ion? Just as someone who I'm sure is wanting this as a good case study for the use of this.
Sure. I mean, I'm just curious if there was anyone or any anecdotes you have of stories that you've seen people that you've other youth or people who are your peers you've worked alongside be able to convey in a way that was really rooted in lived experience, but also helped push forward and ask, like you're mentioning.
Yeah, there are very few issues. I would say a handful of issues that I think most people in our generation can relate to, mm-hmm. that everybody has an experience in. And I think one of the top issues on that list is mental health, because mm-hmm. there is, everyone in our generation has either experienced it themselves or is friends with someone who is experiencing it, has a family member who is experiencing mental health struggles. And so this is something that I have seen has been the starting point for why students get involved in advocacy in the first place. That's why I got involved, because I was diagnosed with clinical depression and OCD, and that's why I wanted to get involved in advocacy in the policymaking space. And now, when I get to work with students all across the country, I get to see that as well, that this is one of the main issues that drives students getting involved. And so I hear all the time that, you know, we've been through a lot, whether it's suicidal ideation, whether it's losing a friend to suicide, whether it's struggling themselves, whether it's just being in that hole of depression. I've seen students be kicked out of school because of their mental health struggles and the school's not being able to support them. Mm-hmm. All of these different stories, and they want to get involved and they want to be able to advocate to make sure that that doesn't happen to any other child, but they don't know how to do that. And so it has to be a combination of a bunch of different measures. And so I think one is having our organization SEAT be there to be a resource, be a community for them, and allow them to be with peers who have experience in this and can help support them through it. But then also have a resource like the primer so that it can go in tandem with the community that they're now a part of and give them that extra boost to help them do that. And so I've had students, particularly like recently I mentioned at our advocacy day, who we showed them the primer and they took notes about, you know, that first of all, we had them write out a full paragraph, a full page about their story. Whatever it may be, as long as you want it to be, whatever details you want to include in it, literally just brain dump whatever is in your mind. And they did that. And then we looked at the primer and we said, okay, based on some of the things that it tells you here, what are some things we can pull out of the story and say, this is something that relates to the topic we're advocating for right now? So if we're talking about mental health stigma in schools and you have this full essay about your mental health story, maybe we pull out a piece about the school counselor not supporting you enough. Maybe we pull out a piece about the teacher being weary of even talking about mental health. Maybe we pull out a piece about the students around you not quite understanding what you're going through, and all of that contributing to mental health stigma. It's not to say that the rest of the story isn't important and we can still tie it into that. Mm-hmm. Well, we have to pick out the pieces that line up directly with that ask. And having the primer there was really helpful. And so we saw students who were so much more confident than when they began, because a lot of times, like I mentioned, you have this jumble of story and you're trying to remember what happened to you and all of these different traumatic things that you've been through. And all of a sudden, you feel more confident in your experiences. You know what you've been through and you know how to channel that into something to help other people. And we've had lawmakers tell us that the only reason that they support specific pieces of legislation is because students came forward and shared their lived experiences. Mm-hmm. So we want these students to continue being able to do that so that we continue to be able to make change.
Yeah. Something you said too, if I may, that I think it made me think about, I think, a really strong guiding question when we're talking to people about storytelling in the advocacy space is, the question of what makes you the most important person to speak on this issue. And I think, yeah, that kind of comes back into, if the issue is mental health stigma, focusing then in on not the negative experiences of your mental health challenges, but what did you face that reinforces this idea that mental health stigma is alive and it's hurting people and right. It's negative, it's not helpful. And so, yeah, pulling out those pieces that have to do with how people reacted to them or the different challenges that they face that reinforce this idea. And that's what makes them so important and such a prominent voice. Why are you the person to talk about this issue? I think is always a really good grounding question in coming up with this script of really kind of making sure that your lived experience story is something that is impactful, but can also fit in like a 2-minute time period. Yeah.
Right. Because a lot of times, folks think that they're unqualified to mm-hmm. speak about these things. I mean, you have these bills that are put forward before these legislative bodies that are hundreds of pages long, that have all the legalese that students and frankly, people of all ages really don't understand. And we have to tell them, no, you are equipped because mm-hmm. this is about you. This is about your well-being. And they want to hear your story and how it's going to affect you. Because I've heard this so much over the past few years, nothing about us without us, right? This is not about us just wanting to be represented just because. This is about because this is going to affect us, and it already is. And you can craft these policies, but you will be able to craft better policies and more effective policies if you hear from the people that it's actually going to affect.
Right. And something else I've really learned through, you know, my time as a policy fellow is you never know who up there on the dais has a nephew or a sister, or whose chief of staff has a mom who's a school counselor. You never know. And so making sure, that's really kind of speaks to this power of storytelling, is that you can bring this larger societal issue to a much more personal and relatable thing that you can't discount anyone from having some way to connect with what you're saying and what you've experienced.
It always builds that human connection, mm-hmm. because this transcends all sorts of boundaries and identities. It transcends political ideology. It transcends race, gender, ethnicity, whatever it may be. This is something that affects everyone. I've testified before committees about my experiences with my mental health struggles, and audience members will come up to me in tears saying that, I have a grandson who I'm going to go get help for now because I have a better understanding of what he's going through. And then I have lawmakers come forward and saying, that really hit home with my personal experiences as well. I struggled a lot as a kid. And even folks you disagree with, even folks you don't even know, this is a way to build that human connection, which our society is lacking a lot of right now.
If you're interested in exploring the Lived Experience Storytelling Primer, we'll include a link in the show notes. Thank you to Maddie Garza and Ion Moladina for sharing their insights. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
As we wrap up, a quick reminder that this episode is part of our new season theme, Growing Capacity for Change. Across four arcs, community, partnership, policy, and research, innovation, and education, we're exploring how people all across Texas are growing their capacity toward a better, more lasting mental health landscape. If you missed the most recent arc of episodes, Partnership, it is in our back catalog, and I hope you take the time to check it out. For your listening enjoyment, here are some snippets from those three conversations.
It is a place where we are concerned not just with the soul of the person, but we're also concerned about the entire being. And so when it comes to mental health, we can be a resource, we can be a place for information, and we can also be a place where we can, guide people to places where they can get the help that they need.
So we do stuff for the inpatients and the staff. And when NAMI, which is more of I'll let Colleen talk a little bit more, but we love our partnership with them because they are more of an outpatient education support system. And so we need, individuals need family support. They need outside support. And so I love that we have started a really, really binding partnership.
You cannot work to address these big issues in silos,
right?
Because it creates duplication, it creates confusion, and there is a power in people coming together and just sitting in a room and learning what each other is doing. And even if that is the agenda for that meeting is like, hey, I didn't know you were doing this, or I didn't know you had a van and I've been needing a van for the last 10 years. There is power in just having a community come together cross sectors to sit in a room and talk about an issue.
If you haven't already, check out our previous episodes this season and follow along as we continue to tell stories that connect and inspire. And that does it for this episode. We're glad you could join us. Production assistance by Cheyenne Salazar, Kate Rooney, and Daryl Wiggins. And thanks as always to the Hogg Foundation for its support. If you have comments or anything that you would like to share about the podcast, feel free to reach out to us at intothefold@austin.utexas.edu. Thoughtful comments will be acknowledged during a future episode. You're my hour, mental health matters. Please leave us a review and subscribe to us on your preferred podcast platform. And don't forget to check the show notes for related content, including past episodes. Transition music by Antony Ryjakov. And taking us out now is Anna's Good Vibes by our good friend Anna Harris. Thanks for joining us.